Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My special guest tonight is visual artist Lisa Barthelson, and we're going to talk about the Family Debris series among her other work. Lisa, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. I haven't talked to you in a long time. It's a pleasure to have you on again.
It's a pleasure to be on and to talk to you, Mark.
We were just talking about COVID. And whenever I'm talking to an artist, I always like to talk to them like, how did you react to the plague? Like, how did the COVID thing affect your output?
I was very productive.
It's really funny. I hate to say this, but it was really good for artists.
Yeah. Because we work alone, many of us. We work in isolation. There were less distractions and other things that we had to do. And we focused on art, or I in particular did, because it provided some sanity, some familiar place where I could get some joy in what was a pretty dark time.
It's interesting how this has worked out, especially for visual artists, but also for auditory artists, for musicians.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing I think applies.
But was there sort of an extra added impetus to make art because there was a feeling like any moment civilization's going to crumble?
I'm not sure if I would distill it to that, but I think there's a bit of that in the fact that I looked at everything that I possessed and had and hadn't finished and could utilize as sort of the base or groundwork for new art, particularly when we were confined to home.
Yeah.
I started pulling out things that I had started or bits and pieces of earlier work and reworking them and making them something new and dealing with them almost, I've said this many times, as domestic homework, where it provided some comfort and sort of a meditative approach to making art. And that really helped me get through it.
Did it change anything about your work, like the way it looked or the colors you were using or whatever?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think my work tends to be chaotic and colorful. And I think
it's funny that you said that because I was just reviewing your work. And it's sort of like looking at Jackson Pollock paintings where your first impulse is like, yeah, wow, that's really chaotic and random. And then I started finding that I thought it was incredibly, there was purpose to all of it. And so it wasn't chaotic. It was definitely artistic.
I think that what you said is very true because I think the initial impression is that my work is really chaotic, but I call it composed chaos because I know when I've gotten where I want to go, and there is, you know, definitely compositional intent and action to bring it to that place. But I think that part of that is just the way my mind works. I take in a lot. And I think that creates sort of this big basket of chaos. and then I want to organize it in a certain way that works for me. And I'm not sure it works for everyone else, but it works for me.
Yeah, but I find you're obviously making aesthetic choices. Because I'm finding a lot of your works, especially your two-dimensional works, your relief stuff, really beautiful. And the color use, the colors chosen and the balances, the stuff balances out. It's you're right. It has this weird tension between chaos and planned, but it's beautiful work. So there's that's an intention, is the aesthetic aspects of it.
And I appreciate that a lot. And I think the other thing that it was already a part of my work, but it became even more intentional during the at-home time, is that I stitch on my prints. And I think
I've been noticing that. Yeah,
I think that came from being a sculptor, and I began to find the prints too flat, too slick, they lacked a certain element of 3D. and though a stitch and a knot are, you know, not high relief, they are a change in texture and a introduction of line and weight and that 3D aspect that really matters to me. And when I was home and stitching on these prints, and a lot of them were small initially, that that was a part of organizing the chaos. That was a part of the meditation on what the color, shape, form. And that was a really important element. It became more important, I think, on this more recent work.
It's interesting because, and people should give out your website.
LisaBartholson.com. Pretty easy.
One word. Spell your last name so people know. It's BARTHELSON.
Correct.
And it's a beautiful website so people can see the examples of what we're talking about. It's funny, the first thing I thought of was the Dada artist who did all the Merz works. And that reminded me of those sculptures, those, and they're organized, but chaotic. But the color use is really brilliant.
I just found
them beautiful works.
Well, thank you.
And the funny thing is, the meaning behind them is really not comforting.
Well, you know, I think color is a really important thing, and I think one sort of contrast between the family debris work that involves the reuse of elements or debris from my house, a lot of which is plastic, that has a really primary and in some ways visually assaulting palette. And when I go to printmaking, those same colors are there, but in my approach, you know, they're tempered by how I mix the inks and how I print. So I think that's sort of an interesting relationship. I still embrace color in a big way, but it's a little bit more my color than the debris that I work with in sculpture. So.
Well, let's talk about the evolution of the Family Debris series, because it's a series that is actually a very political series.
Yes.
And
not everyone sees it that way.
That's a good thing, because I think artwork that's too didactic is like getting the punchline of a joke. You know, you get it and then you move on.
Right.
Your work is much different in that it really has to, you sort of discover this for yourself. When did you start this series?
I started it in 2008. And I started it because my kids were getting older and I was packaging up all their stuff and I was appalled. That's all I can say. I was just shocked at how much stuff we had. It's not at all how I grew up, but somehow I bought into it as a parent of three children. And it was really disturbing to me. So I first tried to get rid of some Duplo blocks, and surprisingly, places wouldn't take them because maybe they would now. But so I decided to build a chair out of those Duplo blocks. And at the time, I'm always obsessed with circles, which you know. And the word out, I couldn't even really describe why, but I had done a list of words, compound words and phrases that had the word out. And I painted this Duplo chair, which was child size, and scratched these words and phrases into it. So it was like a scratch board. And that was the very first family debris piece. And it ended up in the biennial. Nick Capasso included it in an Arts Worcester biennial. And from there, I started to look at all the debris we had.
Wow.
And it was exciting because it was a challenge. And it was meaningful to me that it wasn't going to, none of this stuff would end up in a landfill or an incinerator. And a lot of it was pretty fraught with memories and, you know, concerns about how much, again, we've been consuming. So since then, that's 2008, I've made a lot of family debris work, from printmaking to installation and sculpture and encaustic. And again, I find it challenging. Some people will look at my work and go, oh, my God, she does all these different things. And I have concerns about that at times. But people who know my work and like me, because they say nice things to me, is, oh, I see the common thread. I see, you know, they'll say, oh, I see the common thread. It's definitely family debris work. And people will go to me, so are you done with the series yet? And I'll be like, no, I'm not. You know, we still generate stuff.
Wait a minute. Stop right there, because this is a question that came to me the other day, and I wanted to ask you this. Okay, and I understand, I'm very clear on your perspective on things like consumerism and the environmental impact. But if you're that concerned about it, shouldn't your output get smaller and smaller and smaller?
It is. It definitely is.
Okay, it is.
Yeah, it is.
You used to do huge works.
But I still have all that stuff. So that stuff doesn't get recycled. I still have.
You're talking about you have old work? Yeah. Or and so are you cannibalizing old work for new work?
I'm doing two things. I'm going into parts of our house where I haven't touched this stuff.
Oh, wow.
You know, the attic, the garage.
I just have the vision of your house getting smaller and smaller, like pieces of it coming off. And then.
It's a lot. And I am remaking old work.
That's fascinating.
Or I'm reusing it in different ways. All of that challenge excites me. I mean, I like all of that. I like the dynamics of rethinking, remaking, reimagining, taking things apart, you know, deconstructing, reconstructing. And I'll be honest, I have three kids and their rooms still have some of their old stuff. And either they take it with them when they have their own house, and we know kids these days, that's a much harder thing to do. Or at some point they're going to say, I don't want it, and I'll use it, you know. So that's.
I would love to see your kids like, oh, my God, here comes Mom. Hide your stuff.
Well, there were three different responses to my work, and I actually have talked about this before. The first one was being upset and
thinking
it was an invasion of privacy.
I understand that, seriously.
Yeah. And somehow I didn't get that at first, and because it was stuff that had gone in a black plastic bag to be thrown out. But I realized I didn't run it by that child. I don't give the genders for that reason. And then the second child was interested and would like to own some of the things that were made with their objects.
That is interesting, yeah.
And then the third child just kept bringing me more stuff.
That's an amazing three responses. It's like
it's across the board. It's all of it. And interestingly, they're all older now, so they all like it now. And they all, you know, at some point will own some of it if they want.
To a piece and actually identify stuff that they're responsible for?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I had a show at Bert's Worcester, and they all came and they were picking out, oh, I remember this. Oh, yeah, I remember this. And that's the other thing. You know, people who aren't my family members, if they're of a certain age, they look at some of the stuff and they remember the stuff because they probably had it.
Now, let's talk about the evolution of forms. You were talking about they're chaotic. They are often or were often really large conglomerations sort of held together with all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
That looked like a tornado was going through a house.
That's right.
And there, so there was a lot of energy.
There should be.
Yeah. Your pieces also have a feminist aspect to it. And it's also about motherhood. But I've always identified your work as feminist work, again, without being didactic, but definitely talk to me about that, about the feminist aspect of it. Even when you're talking about using thread, again, fabric arts have historically and unfortunately been identified with women artists only.
Right.
But as soon as you put thread in there and you're holding stuff together, again, I identify that as a feminist image.
Well, I think being a mother and an artist is fraught.
Yeah.
Any artist you talk to, you know, and this is sort of a terrible thing to say, but my other female friend artists will see someone who's really, you know, become a rising star. The first question is, do they have kids? And that's a terrible thing, but it does have a real impact on your output, the amount of time you have to work, sort of your perspective. You're a caregiver, you're a maker, you're a nurturer. I mean, all of those elements often find their way into your art. And I think the first chair, the very first family debris thing talked a lot about that, you know, all of those phrases without, out of it, you know, out of my mind. they all really reflected what my experience was being a mother and an artist and a woman. I think it's been really challenging for women to be artists and to be recognized. I think that's changing. But I think for the most part, we would all admit that primary caregiving for your children is the female role. I would take classes when my kids were growing up just so that I could say, okay, I'm going to be gone from this amount of time to this amount of time.
Yep.
And then I'd come home and I'd say, I have homework now. So I have to, you know, remove myself for a while. Printmaking was a definite result of motherhood, and because I no longer felt like I could paint safely around my kids because I used oil and turp at that time. So I would go to a printmaking studio and I could have a whole session of printmaking without the toxic impact on my family and my children. So, you know, that shaped some of the things you do. Oh, and I made ceramics because I would go on Friday nights to sort of communicate with other women. And I started making a lot of ceramic work for the same reason. It became like a support group. So being a wife and a mother and a woman has definitely shaped my work a lot of the time. But, you know, that's just the reality. I feel fortunate.
And listening to you talk about it really, really struck me that when people think about women artists, they think about independent women who don't have any other, like, aspects of their lives. And we really have not. No, I'm being serious. It's like we don't really think about the real possibility that a lot of women artists have significant others, have children, have other responsibilities. It's like we can't allow that in our sort of cartoon idea of what a woman artist is like. And so that's another aspect of your work that's really important, because it's a reminder then, you know, with a lot of work and a lot of effort, you can do both. It's not that it's really easy to do, but that you can manage both. And I find that really interesting.
And I think it's interesting for your children to see what you're doing.
It's going
to
be great for your children.
Yeah. Well, they can see that you can create and do multiple things, and also that it's important to you, that it's part of the individual you. Have you ever seen the photos of Ruth Asawa, who's a beautiful sculptor, you know, sitting in the middle of her living room with her children around her, creating these spectacular suspended wire crocheted sculptures?
Yeah.
I mean, people figure it out. They find their way to do it because they have to and they need to and they want to. And it makes their lives richer, and it's really an important inherent component of who they are.
I think it's an extension of the way society thinks about artists to begin with, both male and female and in between, or whatever, is that the artist is always the lonely person in the garret working on their own, and there's no sense that there's other people around. And that's like really important to recognize. I got to talk to you about circles.
Oh, yeah.
When the hell did that happen? Because I just have the vision of you of walking down the street and like seeing circles lit up everywhere.
I think that's pretty close to it.
And frankly, some of them are not really quite circles.
Not anymore. It's morphed. It's definitely morphed.
Into what?
To the action of circling around, of me walking same place.
Wow, that's a revelation.
When I first started, I like the circle because of the purity of form. I mean, it's inclusive, it's exclusive, it's so many things. It's like the soul, it's centered. It's got infinite meaning and just beauty. And I really like nature. And I think that was the first thing, was identifying as I moved through the landscape parts of nature that were truly circles and you're right, they did light up in my internal eye. So I started to take pictures of them as I was walking. And I first had a blog, which ironically was called Daily Rounds. And then I realized it sounded like I was a doctor. So So I changed it to Circling Round. And those the first many, many years, I think it was in 2017. I think that's when it was. They were definitely circles. My eye would pick out real, true circles as I moved through the landscape. Then it became arcs and curvilinear things. Then it became things beyond just nature. And it's interesting because people, you know, I really did it for myself because a lot of my work is very time intensive, labor intensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it was my daily fix, my art fix. I would take a picture that appealed to me.
Have you ever exhibited the photographs together?
No, I haven't.
Would you consider it?
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by all those photographs. I'm just always, it sets my mind thinking about, first of all, you out walking and looking in the natural world, and then how you're seeing it.
Yeah.
It's and they're really strange to try to relate together. I would love to see them, a bunch of them, in a single place.
Well, I have thousands of them, and interestingly, it's Rutland's tricentennial, like it's Worcester's, and there are a number of events going on, and I think on the 26th, I'm going to be in the center of Rutland at the Wood Studio with my friend and fellow artist, Leslie Skomp, and we're going to be doing sort of a little art demonstration. We're just going to be working on things, and we're going to hang some of our photos. She also takes photos in Rutland, photos just to show, I don't know, in some ways pay tribute to the natural aspect of Rutland. So that will be the first time I've ever printed them.
Oh, wow.
I know. It's sort of bizarre. But other people have said, you know, you should have a show, you should do a book. And at some point I would focus on that. I have to say for a while I was particularly enamored of ice, and I continue to be to love ice.
Well, ice, especially thin ice?
Ugh, and just the pattern, the mark.
Yeah, some of the stuff is very wild that can happen.
It's
because air bubbles are underneath it. Yeah.
And the freeze-thaw, the marks that leaves. So, you know, I do, and as I said, I've transitioned from purely circles to, because I've been doing this so long, and for a long time I walked the same route, seasonally, daylight, weather, I would record sort of seminal things over and over and over again. So it was, in fact, my physical act of circling round. So it expanded because sometimes I would see something that would delight me and this would be unusual, and it wasn't a pure circle. So
this definitely sounds like another exhibition.
I'm in.
Now, are you part of the Danforth Annual Juried Exhibition?
Yes, I am. I am. I will have sculpture. I'll have one. Well, you know, we talked about the art in isolation, and once I was doing the small pieces that were stitched and collaged, I went on to larger piece together, almost quilt-like pieces, because let's face it, we've been in pandemic for a long time. And I like to make big work, so that was how I was making big work at home. And then I had double-sided family debris monoprints that I had made with intent to, at some point, use them in a way where you could capture both sides or see sort of the patterning on both sides. So I made 3D family debris paper sculptures with thread.
They're really interesting.
And they're fun. I mean, it really pushes, you know, how far can you push the paper? How can you keep them together with thread? What can you do in terms of leaving voids where they can see what's on the inside. So that's been a challenge and really enjoyable. So all of these things evolved out of art in isolation and being home because of the pandemic, or being alone because of the pandemic.
Now, the Danforth Annual Juried Exhibition 2022 is going to be up from January 25th to September.
June 25th.
January. I wish. June 25th to September 18th.
That's right.
And it's at Danforth, the Danforth space, the art space there.
Right.
And that's a good chance to see your work. We're going to run out of time. We only have like 2 minutes left. But I have to tell you, your hanging coat hanger sculpture, that drives me crazy.
Well, isn't it even more relevant now?
It is. It's like you would think it was a political piece.
Yeah.
But before that, because anybody who's had to untangle coat hangers that have been in the, oh my God, if you're OCD, like I have tendencies, that thing is like haunts you.
Well, you know, I do a lot of things with coat hangers, and that one piece, the hanging piece, was purchased by Newport Art Museum. And
it's a beautiful piece, but if you have any kind of tendency to want to order things.
Yeah.
And also, didn't you do a cube of Slinkies?
Oh, yeah. I did a cube and a sphere.
The cube is wild.
And I did a couple of big hanging pieces from recycled and reformed cans, which I really found pleasurable during COVID because I could hammer them and, you know, really get some of my aggressions out and really transform them. I actually totally enjoyed making that piece. And because it's cans, it's not brilliantly colored, but you'd be surprised at the variation inside and outside of cans. So,
I know. Some of it's like really brilliant, like coppery color on the inside, but not on the outside. Yeah.
So
this is going to be a weird question.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever filmed you working?
No, I don't think they have.
Because I thought it like the, well, it's not that, I think it sort of would be really interesting to see. You know, there's that famous film of Pollock painting.
Yeah.
I would love to see you working on a large piece like that coat hanger piece. I would love to see a film of that.
That would be interesting. I think some of it would be deadly slow because it's slow build. You'd have to speed it up. Well, maybe I'll consider doing that. I mean, my studio is like, talk about chaos.
I can imagine. That's like one of those things. Maybe I don't want to see it because I want my imaginary idea of what your studio is like to be in my head. We're completely out of time. My special guest tonight is visual artist Lisa Barthelson. And we've been talking about the COVID and also the Family Debris series. But I want to remind you, you can see her work at the Danforth Annual Juried Exhibition, June 25th to September 18th. Lisa, it's always a pleasure.
So much fun, Mark. I can't wait to see you in person sometime.
I know. At some point when this is over, and hopefully we're still alive, we can actually see each other.
That would be great.
I know. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.
Thank you.